Well, everyone, you're about to witness the inaugural preaching voyage of the good ship Deacon Joe. So let's all pray that we don't wind up shipwrecked. In the gospel, Jesus continues teaching about authentic discipleship. What's required of anyone who wants to follow him in truth, follow him for real. Remember, Jesus taught on this theme in last Sunday's gospel. Then we heard him say, "Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." Today, Jesus says, if anyone wishes to be first, and he means first among those who follow his way, if anyone wishes to be first, he shall be the last of all and the servant of all. Last week we heard that the true disciple must die to self. Today, that the true disciple must be a humble servant. What more might we say about Jesus' teaching? Well, for one thing, in portraying the genuine disciple, Jesus takes the conventional order of things and turns it on its head. After all, in the world we inhabit, 21st century Western society, who among us routinely looks to place ourselves last? Who among us has the mindset of a servant? We might even wonder, can Jesus be serious? What he proposes sounds so foreign to our ears. When Jesus speaks in these kind of challenging, provocative terms, make yourself last of all and servant of all, we may be inclined simply to gloss over what he says. Then again, because we know he's not one for issuing throwaway lines, we can well trust Jesus means what he says, and we ought to be careful not to tune out or be indifferent. Look at the context of Jesus' teaching about discipleship. On the journey, Jesus had sought to prepare his disciples for what lay ahead in Jerusalem, his passion, death, and resurrection. Mark tells us they didn't understand and were afraid to ask Jesus what he was talking about. He had presented them with the most profound realities. They opted instead for the most mundane of preoccupations. Jesus asked his disciples, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they remained silent. They had been discussing among themselves who was the greatest. Now we know that Jesus is unerring in his reading of hearts. His question to the disciples then was rhetorical. He knew about their ambitious contending. And what he went on to teach the 12 was intended to form those men, to mold them after his own heart, to steer them away from pride and excessive ambition and away from envy. For that reason, Jesus taught the apostles in very plain terms. Those 12 to whom he would entrust his church, indeed any genuine follower of his, must be the last of all and the servant of all. A change of heart is what's needed. In our shared human frailty, we're very much like those followers of Jesus who heard him in person. We're all prone to contention. We're all prone to pride and to pride's close relative, envy. Pride and envy compel me to place myself first. Pride and envy speak to me like this: if you receive praise or recognition or some honor, it's not coming to me. I'm being overlooked. Pride and envy tell me, if you win, I lose. And that just can't stand. Jesus knows our fallen human nature. He knows we're prone to grasp and to act in self-serving ways. But he knows, too, that these lead us into discord and unrest, into the disorder and every foul practice that James warns of in the second reading. And Jesus wants better for us. It's for this reason that he tells us, as he tells his apostles elsewhere in Mark's gospel, "It shall not be so among you." Jesus instructs his apostles to train themselves in humility by doing exactly the opposite of what their natural inclinations would have them do. Instead of being concerned about status and vying to gain the upper hand, he tells them to take the last place. Instead of seeking to be master, they should aim to become servants of all, taking on the attitude of a servant habitually, not just occasionally or selectively. What Jesus taught his apostles about discipleship required them to adjust their estimates about salvation and their way of interacting in community, to humble themselves. If we want to grow in humility, we may have to adjust the way we relate to people, and our relationship with God may need some work as well. Simply put, being humble means that we have a good grasp of the reality of things. Being humble means knowing God is God, and we are his creatures. It means knowing God is the source of all the good things we have, and that because he wants nothing more than for us to flourish, we ought to seek his will and follow the path he sets out for us. Being humble doesn't mean we sell ourselves short, pretending we don't count or have no talents. On the contrary, it means knowing that we, all of us, are precious in God's eyes. It means acknowledging that we each have gifts and talents, things we do really well, that these come from God, and that we're to use them in his service and the service of one another. It's even okay for the humble person to feel the joy and peace that come with serving well. After all, Jesus himself taught that his Father would commend dedicated service. "Well done, my good and faithful servant." Becoming humble and remaining humble before God and our brothers and sisters isn't easy. It runs contrary to our fallen nature. It's absolutely countercultural. And the evil one will work continually to sabotage our efforts by trying to undermine our trust in God and deceive us into believing that being humble in the world makes us naive at best and dupes at worst. But just as Jesus sought to form and mold his apostles after his own heart, he wishes to form us as authentic disciples in humble service. Our success depends upon God's grace. If we embrace the sacramental life of the church, the Eucharist we celebrate today, we'll gain the graces we need to do what Jesus asks us to do when he says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart."